This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about Samaritans with volunteer Lisa Neelan, a charity I'm so passionate about, having also been a volunteer myself, and one that luckily I have so much to say about because this week it's just me doing the intro. Danielle, as you may have gathered from our conversation in last week's intro, has increased family commitments at the moment, so is taking a few weeks off from the podcast. So this week it's just me, but the next few weeks I'll be joined by past guest Kyle Moore to go through the stats and other information for those episodes. So first off today, I've got some background information. So Samaritans is a charity aimed at providing free support to anyone struggling to cope with life challenges or at risk of suicide throughout Britain and Ireland by providing a confidential listening and signposting service. This can be via phone on 116 123. This is their free-to-call line and does not show on landline phone bills. You can also email them via joe@samaritans.org or even write a letter, and you can find all these details at samaritans.org. They have also partnered through the pandemic with Shout, who provide key worker-specific support by text. And you may remember Danielle is actually one of their brilliant Shout volunteers. This service can be reached by texting SHOUT to 85258, and I did check SHOUT is not case sensitive, so that's just SHOUT to 85258. Also in the episode, we talk quite a bit about stammering, which is also known as stuttering. This is something our guest Lisa has experience of, and so I've got some background information on that. According to the NHS, there are two main types of stammering. First, developmental stammering is the most common type of stammering that begins in early childhood when speech and language skills are developing quickly. Acquired or late onset stammering is relatively rare and happens in older children and adults, often as a result of a head injury, stroke, or progressive neurological condition. And I've got some stats also from the NHS. So studies they highlight suggest that 1 in 12 young children go through a phase of stammering, and around 2 in 3 children who stammer persistently will grow out of it, although it's difficult to predict when this will happen with an individual child. It is estimated that stammering then affects 1 in 100 adults, with men being around 3 to 4 times more likely to stammer than women. The reason for this is currently unclear. So in doing background research into this, I was quite keen to learn about public figures who have experience of stammering. Having a look into this, I was also somewhat surprised by just how many of the public figures that experience stammering are people that are known for their voice, for speaking publicly, and pursuits that you might think you would shy away from if this is something you've had an issue around. So some examples I found were Ed Sheeran, Emily Blunt, Samuel L. Jackson, Rowan Atkinson, and President Joe Biden, who has been very open about his long-term stammer recently in response to how it has been wrongly interpreted as a sign of physical and mental inability in some of the US news media. And that's something that I've been really following because it's been quite tough to see that when I know that there are so many people that don't talk about this, that maybe had experience with it as a child, or like our guest, have had a level of support with it to where now most people wouldn't realise they do have a stammer. And so this can create a real stigma when you see those kind of headlines and it being used against people. And so, yeah, I wanted to highlight a few of the people that are so known for their voice. So much to get into with today's episode. Really fascinating to hear the guest's experience around stammering and how actually overcoming that became a big part of the motivation for joining Samaritans. And also love an excuse to talk about Samaritans. I'm so passionate about the charity, and particularly on Mental Health Awareness Week here in the UK, it's great to shine a light on the support they give and also in the interview dispel some of the misconceptions around exactly what the service is. So, with all that said, I'm delighted to be joined by Lisa for a really uplifting, empowering conversation that I hope you enjoy. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out. Over the coming weeks, we'll be telling you about products from Grass & Co., an independent business based in the UK that is committed to crafting brilliant products that incorporate CBD. You may have noticed that CBD, which stands for cannabidiol, a THC-free extract of the hemp plant, is becoming increasingly used in health and beauty products. That's because early evidence shows it can have a positive effect in many applications, like reducing muscle soreness or helping us sleep, particularly when combined with other natural ingredients, just like Grass & Co. does. So we've been sent some samples to try, and the first one I'd like to talk about is the Ease Muscle Balm. I've been using it to help ease the muscle ache I sometimes get in my back when the temperature changes. Not only can I feel it working, but the light scent that includes tea tree and eucalyptus makes it a new favourite of mine. To try their products out for yourself, use code HEALTH at grassandco.com/health for 25% off plus free shipping as one of our listeners. That's grassandco.com/health with code HEALTH. And those details are also in the episode description. Grass & Co., a life inspired by nature.
My name is Lisa Neelan. I live in Northumberland, and I would say that my earliest memory of having issues with mental health would be when I was around about 8 years old. I had an accident which resulted in me having a stammer. It was quite difficult for me to adjust from being a fluent speaking kid to somebody who had communication issues. I would sort of isolate myself from then on with friends and things. So even though I had a friendship group already, I was quite a loner from then on just because I couldn't communicate with them in the way that I wanted to. You know, I quite liked school actually, but it stopped me from putting my hand up when I knew the answers. So watching other kids put their hands up to answer things that I knew did affect me as well. So everything as a result of that would slip. And I think I became very within myself. So even though I might not have understood it then as a mental health issue, looking back on it now, knowing more about mental health, I knew definitely that it was.
And looking back, are you able to see those clear links between the way your speech was affected and then your mood and your behaviour from that?
Definitely. Just meeting up with friends, like I say, I would avoid. Doing anything that involved me speaking, I would avoid, which was most things that I loved doing. I used to love being in plays and things at school, but then suddenly took on a musical instrument so that I could still be involved in them, but not what I wanted to do, just as in the background kind of thing, playing that. It was constantly like I was looking in on other people's lives like I had, but I couldn't have anymore. Just used to sort of went off food. Really just, like I say, just became a bit of a loner really, which at that age is pretty sad, you know.
Right. And would you mind sharing what that experience is from the perspective of having a stammer when you're trying to communicate?
Probably harder that I had not had one and then suddenly had one, because I knew what it was like to be able to communicate and I was quite chatty anyway and quite outgoing. But when I first obviously noticed, and it was instant after the accident that I had a stammer, I would not be able to say my name without trouble. There was a lot of sounds for me that I couldn't say. So what I would do as a covert stammerer is I would swap those words around in my mind before I spoke, which made a lot of my sentences not make any sense, because by substituting words, it works sometimes, but not all the time. So sometimes it was just a complete jumbled mess. And because I was aware that's how it sounded, I think it would just make me feel constantly upset, I think would be the word. I would constantly get upset. And if I couldn't substitute a word and I slipped up on a word, so for example, at school, I was late for a class as I had been helping the music teacher with something on a previous lesson. And because I couldn't explain it, so he sort of said, will you explain? You've been helping me and that's why you've been late. But because I couldn't get the words out and it was just nothing would come out, the teacher sort of copied that stammer in front of the class and the whole class laughed with the teacher. It was like every day something similar would happen where you thought you were all right and you are sort of hiding it, but actually that would happen. And then the kids in that class would just mock, I guess, because they were young and didn't really understand any differently. But I just remember always feeling in a really dark place. We had sort of stairs going up to the second level. And I remember at sort of 9, 10, before I left middle school, just standing often at the top of the stairs and just thinking, I wish I could just fall down them, just drop myself down these stairs so that, I don't know, I would have to be sent home or something like that. It was just a total nightmare.
Right, and I'm so sorry to hear that happened to you. And unfortunately, I can see a lot of those connections of why it did, because those kids, not only did they not understand, and stammers are something that are so much more common than people know, and yet are so much less understood than you'd think they'd be for being so common. And at the same time, the teacher was signing off on that mocking behaviour because they were doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you talked about those times when you wanted to hurt yourself, was that at that age in terms of an injury so you could go home just, or was there something in terms of thinking about your future?
Yeah, I don't think at the time it felt as though it was more of a sort of doing serious harm to myself. I think it was more of an interruption to the day, a sort of interruption of the pain that it caused us to have to hide it, or to actually just be able to be all right with having a block, having a stammering block in front of people. So I think that's what it felt like, if I remember rightly. It's a long time back, but I don't think it was to cause serious harm at that age. I think it was more just to disrupt the day.
Yeah, and I can see that, because it must be just so exhausting to go through that. Not only are you doing the mental gymnastics to think, what words do I have to avoid? How do I still make sense? And, you know, that constant checking yourself. Am I going to slip up here? You know, must be so exhausting.
It is. It's a bit like an iceberg where the actual physical stammer is what people see, and the facial distortion that sometimes happens when people really struggle to get a word out, they see all of that. But below the surface, there's the sort of the guilt, the shame, the fact that you're sort of having to start and have difficulty speaking where a toddler can speak. You sort of feel as though a toddler can do a better job. It's something so simple. There's a lot under the surface that people don't see. And I think that is the real link with the stammer, with mental health, is that that sort of shame that it causes is huge.
Oh, for sure. And so often, I think people do make it worse in their behaviour towards it. And I think part of that is how strongly we link language to intelligence, you know, particularly through our education system. And so for me, having dyslexia, that was an incredible diagnosis to receive. And that surprises people sometimes to hear that. But it's because the alternative was I was stupid. Like, I didn't know what else was causing the kind of similar but different blocks I was having around language. Mine were more so written down, you know, and what I hear is that many of the things that I might have experienced where people think they're being helpful and they're actually putting more pressure on you, you may have experienced similar, where people say the words for you, or you can see them become frustrated with you, and that must make it so much worse.
It does. It does, because, like, you know, it's not at all an intelligence issue, or the fact that we don't know what we're going to say, because that's another thing. People often have this totally incorrect perception of is it because you don't know what words to use? Well, of course, I know exactly what I want to say. It's just I have difficulty saying them. I did feel as though, maybe quite not as much when I was younger, but that finishing off of sentences is definitely one for me that makes me feel often like I'm not capable of finishing a sentence, which again, I always relate to, well, a toddler could finish a sentence and you're having to finish one for me. And I think it is, they do it to help us. And I understand that. So I've never held it against anybody for doing it. But the way that it makes you feel afterwards is like that, you know, stomach churning sort of, oh, I haven't made that sentence, you know, I haven't got to the end of it. Very difficult, but nice that you can relate. And I totally can relate to where you're coming from as well.
Yeah, and it's one of these things, right, where, you know, I always say there's far more that unites us than divides us. There's, yeah. For me, there's a lot of crossover in some ways. I used to have issues which I was never diagnosed with a stammer. And it was, you know, primarily just thought to be something related to my dyslexia. But I still get it sometimes in group settings. It's something yeah. like the pressure of there being more people to talk to and more kind of word-based information almost to process. Sometimes I can't quite keep up with it. And then I will kind of trip on my words. And when I was younger, that would happen a lot more. And I can see looking back, some of the like self-consciousness I dealt with more.
Right.
Which can also then make the stammer, the physical symptoms worse.
Exactly. It's that sort of, you can't do right, can you really? It's just a constant vicious circle.
Yeah. And so may I ask then, when you were talking about the way you ended up isolating yourself and avoiding social situations, was there a particular point where that got to its worst?
I had a patch where I became a little bit more self-acceptant of it, I think, as I got older. But I left school early, things like that, you know. I would have wanted to go to uni, but I knew that my speech would never have allowed us to go to university. And now I've got a daughter at university, and knowing how much she has to speak and do presentations and things, I know that I wouldn't have managed with all of that physically and mentally. I wouldn't have got through it. So just different paths that life I've had to take because of it, which is, looking back now that I've got some control over it, seems a bit mad. But at the time, it would have been a case of that deciding different paths for me rather than me deciding. That's how it felt.
Right. And that's horrible to hear, because it just shouldn't be that way. You know, because that's no, like we've said before, it's no reflection of your abilities. You know, it's just that we have a kind of one size fits all system. But in the same way I got extra time in my exams, it seems obvious that there should have been workarounds freely available for you as well.
Yeah, I actually really loved school. Came away with A's and B's, didn't do A-levels because of the same reason. I just wanted to get out of there and find a job that didn't really involve much speaking, which was quite hard to find. I think it was just a case of getting out of there as soon as I could. I was at the point by 16 when I left school that I had just felt as though I'd had 8 years or whatever of this agony with the difficulty in communicating, that I just wanted it to be for me to control then, and maybe get into a space where I didn't have to speak much, which is pretty, it's pretty isolating, to be honest. Because I was leaving friends that were staying on and watching them stay on and know they would eventually go to uni, and knowing that, you know, I was probably going to end up in a job that I wouldn't have chosen, which I wouldn't have chosen it. But it's just how it is, isn't it?
Right. Well, you know, you make the best decision you can at the time. It's good that, I guess, you had options where you could see future. You could see, OK, there's ways that I can work around this and hopefully work towards getting to a place where this is less of a problem. And so am I right then in thinking it was much later in your life when you got further support, when you were then a parent?
Yeah. So my stammer, it's. When life is going well, I find it's easier to manage. But when life isn't going as well, I find it's so much worse. And that's probably to do with the fact that it tends to be that your whole being, if it's off kilter somewhere, it ends up affecting the way that you know, the way the stammer is, and panic leads to that blocking and so on. Yeah, I got married and I had my daughter Rachel, and life was going really well. but he was doing most of the speaking for me. So parents' evenings and things like that, I would go, but obviously I would let my ex-husband do most of the talking at things like that. And then that marriage broke down when Rachel was about 8. It was like as though a switch was flicked. And because I had to do all the speaking for everything, it went back, it just regressed so much that I could hardly get a word out again. But I had nobody to rely on to do the speaking. I just got myself in such a mess. I couldn't even afford to book the car in for service. There was very little things online then that you could do online. You had to ring. I missed parents' evenings. Rachel had just started a new school. I found that really difficult, communicating with the school. And I think for me, that was probably my lowest point ever of my life. I used to take a little bit of paper around with me to get on a bus, for example, that said where I wanted to go. I used to go into Newcastle for work at the time. I got on the bus one day and the bit of paper wasn't there, and just nothing came out because I couldn't say N sounds, so I couldn't say Newcastle. It was a bit of a nightmare, but I had a complete blocking moment, and there was a bit of a queue to get on the bus, and the bus driver asked me to leave the queue because I was taking up too much time. And I think that was the moment for me that I remember coming off the bus and thinking, if I can't even get on a bus, how on earth will I bring up a kid on my own? It was that real sort of moment for me that I thought, how on earth am I going to cope with this? So I think, in a way, I always look back on that, though, and I always sort of look back on it thinking that bus driver did me a massive favour that day, because I knew that I had to do something about it. I didn't want my life to be ruled by the way I spoke or the way I couldn't speak. I knew that I had my daughter to bring up, and I wanted to show her that you could overcome things if it was affecting your life and you wanted to change. Although that was the lowest moment for me, it was probably the turnaround moment where I thought something has to change.
Right. And I'm sure, you know, even through your work with the Samaritans now, you're saying that so often for people, it does take getting to a certain point where there's only so much the workarounds can support your mental health. And then there comes a point where it's like, okay, this can't continue anymore. And so yeah. I can see what you mean, that you would have come off that bus. Not that you are, but you could have easily felt so useless. See yeah. everyone waiting for you and all the pressure and everyone else getting on the bus, you know, having no difficulty.
Yeah, it was definitely that moment for me. And I just sat on this seat next to the bus stop when the bus left. And I just thought, oh my goodness, like what am I going to do here? Like, what am I going to do? And that was the first time for me where I contacted Samaritans, but luckily through their email service. Thank goodness they have an email service, because I wouldn't have been able to pick up the phone. And I think at the time it was just being able to reach out for some help and to be able to put it in writing as well, because I obviously could do that without an issue. So I could write down exactly how I felt, how low that I felt, and got a pretty much an instant reply. They'll never, ever know how much that did for me at the time. So, I mean, I know now with callers and with people that email, I know how much the support means because I've been there myself. So, yeah, definitely one of them moments, though, that I wouldn't want to go back to that place again. But then in another respect, it's lovely that I found out that there was support out there that I could go to. And, you know, I wouldn't hesitate to reach out for that kind of support again now that I know it's there. Yeah. A lovely moment in the way that it was when I discovered Samaritans, let's put it that way. But they're not a nice moment in the way that my life was going at the time. And, you know, continue to go for a little bit, I've got to say. But then turned around a little bit by reaching out for some help with the speech side of things. But the mental health side of things has always ran alongside. And until I sorted the speech, I didn't really feel any relief with my mental health.
You know, I remember in my time at Samaritans feeling such privilege hearing from callers, and so many of them were sharing things for the first time they'd never told anybody. And I'd imagine because of how the emotions can influence your speaking, this may be something you'd not spelt out in this depth to somebody, that this is how this really makes me feel.
No, I had never. I did a little bit of speech therapy when it first came on. I did a bit of speech therapy, but it was like an hour a week. And really, they were more interested in different techniques to use when I had a block rather than how it made me feel. I don't even think that was ever really mentioned. It wasn't until like I got a bit older that I realised the link, I think, between how I was feeling about me with this speech issue. But to be able just to write down my feelings and to get such a lovely response just meant the world. It was a real turnaround moment for me, because I think if I hadn't reached out and I hadn't had such lovely replies back, I don't know what direction I would have probably gone in. I was in such a bad place at the time.
And, you know, that's why it's so incredible that there is this service and that there are such wonderful volunteers like yourself. So do you mind sharing a little bit of what led up to you joining Samaritans and then what kind of made the decision for you? I think I've got an idea what made the decision, but what made the decision to join?
Yeah, well, I got some help. Just watched a documentary by chance on, I think it was Channel 4 at the time, about a speech therapy program called the Maguire Program, which was run by people who stammer, for people who stammer. And a friend of mine rang and said, oh, have you seen this? And I just caught the end of it and just said, I wonder if it's something that would be able to help you. So I was working for Northumbrian Water at the time, and I was really struggling with work at the time as well. So watching this documentary, I sort of plucked up the courage to ask my manager then if they would support me, because it was a private speech therapy program. I had to have some money behind me to go for it. Would they sort of consider helping me down this route, because it would really help me in my job? No, I was so supportive. Said yes, no problem. I got signed up to a course in Newcastle not that long after that. It was an intensive 3 days course, and it was the most confronting ever, though. You had to really confront this thing head on. It was a non-avoidance based course where they learnt you the techniques, and then at the very end of the course they took you out onto Northumberland Street and you had to speak to 100 strangers using your new speaking technique. You are with a coach, so you had the support, but you also had to do what we call disclosures. As part of those 100 contacts, you had to not only just ask people where John Lewis is or what the time is, but you also had to say, I'm on a speech therapy program at the minute, I've got a stammer and I'm working on it, would I be able to introduce myself to you? So that I could overkill that name thing that I had issues with. And then at the end of the Saturday, you had to stand on a soapbox in the middle of Northumberland Street at 3 o'clock. I'll never forget it, on a busy Saturday afternoon. And I had to do like a little public speech. So we all did, everybody who joined, you know. And there was people, the coaches who had been with were for the last few days, gathered around the soapbox. But also hundreds of shoppers did as well. And I remember afterwards thinking, if I can stand up and do this on Northumberland Street, then I could probably just do now what I want to do. It was a pretty much instant decision when I got home. It's continuous. I still work on it. I'm a coach myself now. I've got to work on it every day, basically, but it's worth it. And it was an instant decision when I joined that course that I wanted to not only use it for me, but I wanted to give back to what really helped me when I really needed the help, and that was Samaritans. So I thought, what better way to use my voice than to be a volunteer? And that was pretty much an instant decision for me that was made when I left the course. I changed my job and loads of lovely things happened to me. I was in a documentary for ITV all about this program, and life got busy and it got really interesting. So there was a bit of a gap, but then joined the Samaritans and did the training, and I've never looked back on it. I love it.
That's so wonderful. And to think that your voice, the thing you struggled with most for so much of your life, is now exactly what you use to help people. It's incredible.
Yeah. And I love it. And I never lost that. I've been a volunteer. Well, I started training in October 19, but the start of 2020 was sort of when I started, you know, on the phones. And I still now, every shift that I do, just before I pick up the phone, I always have this really special feeling of, wow, I used to avoid telephones like the plague. And now I'm actually signing up to do shifts where the majority of the time is picking up a phone and using my voice without any difficulty or any fear of speaking. And that is it's so special, really special.
Yeah, and it is, I think, such an incredible skill. You know, I don't think I can really compare it to anything.
No.
I guess for me, I was slightly the other way around, where the emails were the harder thing. And part of that is the kind of things that people disclose to you. You can be really stuck on what do I even say to that?
Yeah.
You know, what can you say to a lot of these things? But if you find a way through it, and the training is also really excellent, and the support around you from the other volunteers is excellent, you learn these skills that can be used everywhere. You know, and I definitely apply my ability to have difficult conversations and not be shocked by things that people tell me, and, you know, not react badly. That definitely applies to me hosting this show.
No, I can imagine. I mean, I think everything that you pick up in life, you can use for other things. I mean, the strength, I think, to get through the Maguire program is I've definitely used it for other issues in my life. I think you can just use different experiences to strengthen your character, I think, a little bit more. But I think with Samaritans, you know, it's so non-judgmental. It's just knowing that you're there for someone, just as someone who can just listen and just give them time and patience and empathy. I think there's something really nice about it. And for me, you know, I would rather spend my spare time doing that than sitting around doing nothing or watching something else on Netflix. For me, going and doing a four-hour shift, I feel better that I probably haven't solved everybody's problems, but I've been there just as a listener for somebody to talk through things with. The loveliest feeling is the calls that come in and the start off really, really difficult, and you know they're in a bad place. But then by the end of the call, you might be having a little bit chuckle with them, and you know that they actually sound as though there's been a weight lifted just by them talking about things. You know, not all calls might go like that, but many do. And it's just such a lovely thing to do. It really is. But you mentioned the training, which is continuous, obviously. And the training, I just don't think I've ever been through anything as well, sort of well done ever before. It's just in the support, like you say, you know, we're all really good friends. It's like a little family, really, to be honest. We all support each other.
For sure. And I'm still in contact with many of the people that I met during that process. And, you know, it does attract a particular type of really caring soul, and people that have, generally speaking, been through some things that have taught them the value of human connection and looking after each other. One thing I always try and dispel, you know, a possible myth around, is that I think a lot of people, because of the understanding of Samaritans and the connection with suicide prevention and awareness of suicide as an issue in our society, I think a lot of people then think that it's only people that are actively suicidal that then contact the service.
It is. It's a big range. I mean, a lot of sort of calls in relation to grief, I think, I find quite a big one. I think maybe slightly more so at the minute with COVID, obviously. You know, people feeling lonely and isolated, which I think is all, not just for COVID, but it's been there from starting to be a volunteer. Domestic abuse, young people struggling at uni to cope with workload. It's just so many. If I thought about it, there would be so many different things. But I always think that none are less worthy than the other. And I think there is a perception, I know since I've been a volunteer, just talking in general about mental health with friends, is they always seem to think that you have to be suicidal to ring Samaritans, when in fact the whole objective of Samaritans is to bring the suicide rate down. So surely by ringing us and talking about problems before they escalate to something bigger, to me is so important. So I always say, if you've got anything on your mind, never compare it with other people's problems. That would be the number one thing. Never think it's smaller than somebody else's issue. Because we get so many callers that come on and say, I don't know whether this is the kind of thing that I should be ringing you and bothering you about. Well, if it's on your mind, then yes, you should. They should talk to somebody about, whether it's us or, you know, other mental health organisations or people around them. It's just getting that weight, isn't it, off your shoulders kind of thing.
Oh, for sure. And that's quite a distinct memory you've reminded me of my time at Samaritans. How many people would tell you, oh, I'm not sure if this is the kind of thing you would want to hear about or I should be calling about. And then it would often be something that is very serious. Yeah. But it's that, you know, that judgment that can be a big component of if you're struggling with your mental health, you know, it can affect your worth, whereby you then don't know if you're worth getting the support. And I would say that Samaritans is an incredible antidote to that in many ways, because other than you call and you get through to somebody and they say, Samaritans, can I help you? The rest of the call is led by the caller. So maybe you'll be signposted other resources. Maybe it'll be a short call. Maybe it'll be a longer call. But there's no big commitment to making that phone call. It is primarily a listening service.
Of course. And often I think people ring up, and like you say, it might not be, they might not think it's big, but actually when they start and open up and they know that you're there to listen, you know, without any judgment and support them, you know, emotionally, then I think that it helps people to open up even more. So what may have started off as a reason they rang, it could be something much, much bigger by the end of the call. But saying that, I never really underestimate the difficulty people have in picking up the phone. And I always reassure people of that when they ring, because I think it's really important that people, that we acknowledge how huge an issue or a huge a deal it could be for somebody to ring Samaritans, because I think there is a little bit of stigma still around mental health. I think it's improving, but I think there's very much, you know, I think there's very much that thought there, oh, if I ring a mental health line like this, I have to acknowledge that I've got an issue. And I think that's what makes it big for people. So I think to just reassure them that, yes, you've done the right thing, you know, you're really brave for picking up the phone, I think can just reassure someone really at the very start of the call and make them feel comfortable in exploring, you know, whatever's going on for them further, you know, further into the call. Yeah.
And it is incredible the difference listening can make. You know, a lot of the calls that I took were around things that were, you know, temporary problems for people. And it was really great to hear that they would pick up the phone for that and that they would access the service and hopefully use it again if they needed to. You know, I think of like nerves about a job interview, nerves about all sorts, going on holiday. Yeah. You know, or where should it be nervous about going on holiday? It's a good thing. But, you know, these can all be valid things. And it's incredible to think talking to a stranger and have them actively listen can make such a big difference.
I mean, that anxiety that you, you know, described there, why should you have that alone? You know, and it could just be that one call might just relieve some of those stresses by just, you know, talking about them. But yeah, exactly. I can't really stress it enough that Samaritans is there for anybody. You know, it's not there for a particular issue or a particular level of seriousness of mental health. It's there for everybody who feels as though it would help them to talk to somebody.
Couldn't agree more. So thank you so much for joining me today. It's been great to catch up. Always love to talk to a fellow Sam. And yeah, thank you for sharing.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely talking to you.
And I already told you off air, I love your accent. I'm so envious. It reminds me of friends that I can't see in the pandemic. And yeah, look forward to travelling back up north, hopefully soon.
Oh, lovely.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.